Hey, folks, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. Before we launch into this week's episode with The Path Less Pedaled, I've got something that Matt Piccio had passed along, and just wanted to make sure that you guys knew. There's this thing happening down in Clackamas County. It's called the Tour de Clack. It's a 30-mile loop through the watershed of Clackamas County, featuring lots of stops and chances to learn about the various ecosystems that exist out there, fish passage, streamside stuff, all that. So anyways, check out clackamasriver.org. It's clackamasriver.org. Anyhow, we'll have a link to this up on our website. This all happens on July 7th at 9 a.m. It's totally free. So thank you, Matt. And without further ado, we give you our episode this week.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Oh yeah, we should probably...
I can't get over how funny you look in that shirt, bro.
The Branson Kiosk.
This episode brought to you by... Let me offer this. It's just hitting my... Funny bone. I think the funniest fucking t-shirt.
Well, it's one of those... There's nothing tied to time and culture more than maybe like an internet kiosk. Like before we all like walk around with one in our pockets. Like there's an ATM in the middle of the room that I will use to check my email.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's give it just a minute of silence so I can edit it into a nice, concise, professional beginning, and then we'll start. Okay, perfect.
And the thing backs up at that exact moment.
And this is the SprocketPodcast.com. We're here with Russ Rocha and Laura Crawford from The Path Less Pedaled for their third appearance. You are officially, I think, now the most prolific guests on the Sprocket Podcast, so thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having us.
It's
good to have it all together. And you guys are fresh off of lots of things.
Yes.
Last time you were here was... year ago or slightly less, 11 months.
I think so, yeah.
It's a long time. So yeah. Much has happened. Was it last? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Because, it was
like that's a rare thing. Oh, you're right.
Were we in Portland?
That one time it rained and it worked.
Well, at any rate, welcome home. For the time being, you guys are choosing to make Portland your home for the next however long, the next indefinite amount of time.
Yeah, we're looking to make it a home base, so we'd still go out on trips, but we'd come back to Portland.
Right. And contrary to other summers that you've had, this is going to be a summer of advocacy, not by doing, but by telling.
Yes.
Or something like that. Is that an accurate way to say it?
Yeah.
Okay, because you've done a lot of doing over the past couple of years, and it's a mode shift. It's a new way. It's finding a new voice and a new way to push the message that bicycle travel.
I have no idea what you're talking about. What the hell is he trying to say?
Well, we're still going to on our site. We've been advocating for bicycle travel by doing these long term trips, and we're going to still continue to do that, but kind of shift up the format a bit. We're going to. Now look at short trips and work with tourism groups and everything, and hopefully get more people excited about doing short tours.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Right. Bicycle Overnights is one site that I've seen recently, mm-hmm. which has just tons and tons of resources. And I'm surprised it took as long as it did for the internet to have a resource like that. But,
exactly. Yeah.
But there it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice. And of course, pathlesspedal.com as well, which also has a bunch of good things. just last night, I saw the video you guys put together, What is Bicycle Travel? And mm-hmm. And then I Twittered it thereafter. But that's a nice little short kind of just, all the things that we like about bicycle touring rolled into one short little digestible segment.
Yeah.
How long has that been out? Am I woefully late on the?
That's been out too long, but it's like all that footage. It's a mix of stuff from when we went through Montana, Oregon, some stuff in New Zealand. So when you see us driving on the left-hand side of the road, that's why.
Yes. Yeah, I did notice that. That's unusual.
Yeah, but we wanted to make something short and sweet that kind of really sums up the things that we like about bike travel. Mm-hmm. So the people, the kind of quiet moments and stuff.
Yeah. Food. Food is good. Was there food that you liked?
There was always food that we liked. Not as much in New Zealand, unfortunately, but okay. Yes, there's always food that
lamb and mint chips. Did you have those?
I could never. It tastes like lemon mint.
I could never bring myself to try them.
They're really weird. But
they just this idea of them is really weird.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that I really latched onto Hokey Pokey ice cream.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put it in my mouth the first few months we were there. It just sounds so strange. It's not very descriptive. It just says
you want
ice cream
with Hokey Pokey.
Yeah. Ice cream with Hokey Pokey, and I'm like, what the heck is that?
It's what it's all about.
Apparently.
What is Hokey Pokey? What do you describe that as?
I'd say it's kind of like a crystallized, caramelly, crunchy thing. So it adds good texture. And
it's kind of like that honeycomb candy stuff. It's like, yeah, it's kind of like crystallized marshmallows.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know? Is it like Heath Bar? Is it crunchy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not as hard as Heath Bar.
Right. I bought like a Heath Bar by mistake the other day at work. I was going for something else in the vending machine. You hit just like one number, one digit. It's like it's supposed to be D5 and you hit like D4 or whatever. And so, yeah, I got a Heath Bar. I didn't want it, but oh well. So this Hokey Pokey
is the worst day ever.
It was serious. It's the worst thing that's happened to me in months.
I wanted a Snickers, not a Heath.
I wanted the homie. So... We should probably say before we get too much further that we're enjoying.
Evidently, with very little food in any of us,
we're uproariously drunk right off the bat. This is a beer that was recommended to us by a listener, Ryan, in Canada. I'm gonna have to. I want to say Ontario, and I think that's right, but I'm not sure.
Maldite.
Yeah, he sent us an email that. He sent us an email and he said, "Hey, we would like to sponsor your beer." And he recommended something, I assume, something classy for Brandon and something lowbrow for me, because he was probably listening to the earlier episodes. So, what's this called again? Maudite?
Yeah, that means damned.
Really? Okay.
Well, there's really bad graphic typesetting here, where it's like there's the logo and then a U shape of text all the way around it.
Okay.
And so I can't tell if I'm supposed to go like this and then over. I don't understand.
Okay.
So, yes, there's randomly the word damned parenthetically that could be plausibly following the title of the beer. So,
okay. Well, now we know.
If you guys want to take a guess at it.
Yeah,
okay.
This is from what is it called? Unibrow or something like that, which is French maybe for Bert's facial hairstyle.
Yeah.
So, of Bert and Ernie. This is one that I've admired in the store for a long time and never bought, but this brewery has some of the best labeling, in the world because this one has what?
Except like, for their graph, their
except text for their text setting. Layout. Yeah. This one has like a bunch of demons rowing a canoe through the sky and it's all like themed orange and fiery.
Had a relationship like that.
After I saw that one, when I was in the store looking at other beers, there was another one that had like an apocalyptic horse rearing over a castle, and that's also a good label. So, anyways, this I believe Unibrow Brewing has some good artists working for them. The other beer that was recommended was I think it was Mousehead is how he typed it, and I think Moosehead was the only thing because I sent my wife to look for it at John's Marketplace in Multnomah Village here in Portland, Oregon, and that's a fantastic beer store.
I sent my wife to. Beer wench.
She works in Multnomah Village, Brandon, and I said, "So, while you're in the neighborhood, would you mind doing a favor for me? I'll buy you a beer if you do." And so, and so she did that.
So you paid the beer wench in beer. Okay, great.
You're really not framing this very well, sir.
You soft pitched it to me, man. I had to swing.
So that's what we're doing. But anyways, the Moosehead is. For good or for ill, it's not my preference in beer. So thank you, Ryan, for the suggestion, and thank you for funding the Moosehead, but I can't say that I enjoyed it.
And that is a really hard thing. You need some sort of medal for finding a beer that Brock does not like.
Well, I think if with a taste like that, it should have much higher alcohol content than it does. I think that's my baseline.
You would totally drink it if it were like 10 or 12%.
Well, and if it was 10 or 12%, I think it would be a lot more syrupy. This is just like 7-Up, but tastes like flavored like Heineken or something like that.
Wow.
So no good. Not for me anyways. But once again, Ryan, thank you for listening, and we love you. So we should probably set this up. Russ and Laura, since you're here, let's talk to you. We were talking about all the things in general the past year, and you were in New Zealand. Leading up to that, though, there was another project that you were preparing for, and you actually, I think you sent me a postcard from Montana with a fly fisherman. And that was a fantastic postcard. And I almost, it was long enough that I forgot that you guys were out there.
Yeah.
And then it showed up. I mean, I followed the blog and everything, but then, yeah. You know, there was like this real world thing in the mailbox and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. They're actually doing this. Yeah. So, that was Big Adventure Small Wheels. Is that right? And,
And
that's what we talked to you about last time you were here. How long did that go and what was that like?
Well, it was, I think it ended up being about 2 months. We were supposed to kick off middle of May, and then the day that we were supposed to leave, I fell down the stairs and sprained my ankle. So we got delayed by a good 6 weeks out of the gate there. And so I think we were on the road for about 2 months straight before we had to hightail it back for my brother's wedding. But it was a pretty incredible 2 months.
Yeah, it was our first real, like, loaded, extended trip with the Bromptons. So there was still that uncertainty if they were going to make it up and over the passes.
Yeah.
Because up to this point, they hadn't really been tested like that, right? Like, as far as I know, you two...
Like a beach trip.
Yeah, we had done short trips, you know, one night, two night kind of things.
Kind of weekenders?
With most of the weight, but not the entire load. And certainly not, I mean, you get out into, like, Eastern Oregon and Montana, you're carrying, you know, 3-4 days worth of food and... Obviously, that gets heavy. So.
Right, and the Bromptons aren't big. They're small. We probably talked about this a little bit last time you guys were here, but the way that you economized on space and found ways to carry things on the Bromptons was pretty innovative in and of itself. Like, I was impressed.
We were able to get things. They've got the front touring bag that carries, I don't know, about a painter and a half worth of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the rest we put on a backpacker's backpack that sat on the rack. And the idea was that if we were going to go multimodal, like take a train or a bus or something, we could, you know, sling the backpack on, have the front bag in one hand and roll the Brompton in the other. And for the most part, it worked out, you know, as we planned. So
it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was really cool because one of the biggest curses, I think, of getting around by bicycle is having multiple bags that you have to sling in some fashion or another. And you guys toured with the Surly Long Haul Truckers before that.
Yeah.
And so you kind of had to do the, like, four panniers and how you hold them all.
Well, and the end of that big trip on the Surlys was really what informed the Bromptons, you know, getting on and off of trains, you know, getting into cities, and you've got a loaded, you know, bike with four panniers plus a duffel on the back rack and, you know, front handlebar bag, and it's just like impossible to carry all that. So
So the consolidation was just having an actual backpack that you could wear on your back when you're carrying it around.
Yeah. Right.
And then the bag that doesn't come stock with the Brompton, but it's designed to be carried by the Brompton's front bag hitch.
It's actually supported by the frame, which is like genius, because when you turn the handlebars, it's like the load's always centered and it doesn't move.
Right.
Unlike front panniers that kind of, you know, throw the balance of the bike, but there it's always, you know, it actually stabilizes the ride of the bike really well.
Definitely. And Brandon, I was trying to remember, have you ever ridden a bike with front panniers on it?
Briefly.
Okay, yeah. It's a weird feeling. It really throws off your steering, and it's almost like you're going from mechanical automatic steering wheel in a car to driving one of the old 1930s coupes that has no power steering at all.
Yeah.
It's an interesting difference.
We just went out with Cycle Wild this last weekend.
Oh, that's right. And they went to, was it Ainsworth again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was, you know, just for shits and giggles, trying out a load with the, you know, front panniers and a rear saddlebag on the Surlys. We dusted them off, and man, it throws off your steering so much. And in comparison to the Brompton, it was like, man, I miss having that, you know, that weight perfectly centered right in the middle. So
yeah,
actually, I was thinking like a fun bike to do a tour on would be like a cycle truck.
Yeah.
You know, because you have like a centralized weight that's relatively low. You don't have to worry about left-right balance.
Yeah.
I don't know, we're going to see if we can borrow like a Halstead or like a Soma Tradesman and try a short tour on it.
Mm-hmm. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Transport Land?
Yes.
It's the new thing that's just kind of getting rolling. And I sent a plethora of emails to all the people involved with that saying, come in, we'll buy you all beer. So maybe we'll talk to them sometime. But they had an experience recently where they went out camping with, I think it was Bullets. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of cool just to know that it can be done.
Yeah.
So you guys did the whole Brompton tour multimodal here in the States.
Right.
And then did you guys end earlier than you had planned to, or was it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we we had to come back because my brother got married, you know. And so we knew that that was going to happen.
You want to be there for that sort of life stage.
Yeah, yeah. And then we sort of figured that we would, you know, get back out on the road after that, and then, you know, had all these other great opportunities that popped up. So we did a little bit of other traveling, you know, a few short trips here and there, and got down to San Diego and
We did a bunch of presentations. We did a presentation at Velocult when they were still in San Diego. We went to Interbike, went up to Seattle for something.
Yeah, went out to the San Juans. So we did get around a bit the rest of that fall. And then jumped ship and flew all the way to New Zealand with the Bromptons and spent 3 months over there.
Yeah. So New Zealand is something that you guys wanted to do for a while, I assume.
Yeah.
It's something that was kind of boiling in the back of your minds. What kind of put you over the edge and just said, we're going to do it now?
Well, you know, I mean, New Zealand is one of those places where you see the pictures and you think, oh my God, that must be an amazing place to cycle through. And so it was, you know, one of like the top three countries that we wanted to get to. And then we started hearing all about the government of New Zealand, the conservative government of New Zealand funded $50 million for cycleway construction to try and entice cycle tourists to come and travel through New Zealand. And we're like, wow.
They're doing it right.
No kidding.
That's pretty darn incredible, and we got to go
see
this.
That's a conservative government.
Yeah.
I'll take it. And two.
The look of amazement on Brandon's face here was priceless. He was like, what?
So that pretty much pushed it over the edge, and then, you know, Russ discovered they have good fishing, and so, you know, I think that clinched
that's
the
all
deal.
You need.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the carrot and the stick and the whole thing, so yeah. And you guys were there for how long?
3 months.
3 months, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting journey.
Well, not the least of which was mechanical difficulties. You want to talk about that now?
Yeah. So,
not to say that there weren't lots of good things that happened, but I guess some of the best stories come out of
Well, we had some wacky experiences. Once we were on Waiheke Island, riding out to the ferry, and then Waiheke is like up and down. You're either going up or down, super hilly. Mm-hmm. And we're going down a hill, and all of a sudden I hear Laura like scream and pull over. I'm like, what? And one of her brake pads fell off.
Oh,
like
just fell out of the holder. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like it's physically possible, you know, because it's like the you know, the way that the rotation works, it should hold it in there.
But sure.
Yeah.
And there's like screws and threads and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and those are supposed
exactly.
to work.
Yeah. No, the screw I think managed to work its way out, and then, you know, whatever other glue or something that should have been holding the pad in just, you know, came undone.
Yeah. Fortunately,
and I was like, great. You know, here we are in, you know, this volcanic island, you know, up and down. No
bike shop. So. Yeah. But the next volcanic island we landed on happened to have a little hardware store that did have a bike section. Thankfully. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So that worked out well.
Yeah. And another, I guess, a really big mechanical was we were coming down on the South Island to Greymouth, just about to push out of the hostel when all of a sudden the bike felt really wobbly, unduly so. So I looked down, and then the bike was kind of separating beneath me, like the hinge.
Yeah. Russ is trying to play this down. The bolt that holds the entire bike together broke.
That's nothing to be played down, sir. that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit of a minor setback. But it's funny, you know, I emailed the Brompton Tech and, you know, Todd over at Clever Cycles. I sent pictures. I was like, okay, this is a trip over. You know, do we have to go home now? Yeah. And they're like, oh, no problem. We'll just send you a new part. You know, you'll just find the mechanic and they'll have to drill it out. So everyone seemed relatively calm about it. So I was like, okay. So then we took a train from Greymouth to Christchurch. Waited a week for the part to come, and sure enough, found the bike shop that would handle the job, and, you know, it's been fine since then.
Okay. The phrase drilling something out makes me worry, but
it made me worry, actually. The mechanic put the bike on the stand, and he just took out a power drill, and, you know, the Bromptons are not cheap bikes. So I was like, I was filming him for about, like, 10 seconds, and after that, I just had to turn away.
You just can't watch it happen.
Yeah.
But that fixed it, and that got you operational again.
Yeah.
Was that something that had to be like refixed later, or was that like pretty much what needed to be done? And then you
when we got back into Portland, I had the folks over at Clever Cycles, you know, replace a hinge again, just because there's like certain torque things and Loctites and stuff that I don't know if you know, they did correctly, and or I was just making sure that it was done right. So we had the mechanics for Portland do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good idea, just in case. You want to make sure it's all buttoned up.
Yeah,
because it's a bit of a specialized bike, and, you know, there's some nuances to the maintenance. Yeah.
And the shop that we worked with at, you know, in Christchurch, the mechanic was really awesome, but he'd never done that and never worked on a Brompton before. So you want to trust him. You never
Right. that he knows what he's doing. Yeah. Even if he doesn't, that, you know, he has a reasonable mental facility to do to work on it. Yeah.
Good guy, but, yeah.
Yeah, he actually rode Penny Farthing. He rides Penny Farthing to work, and he also does little speaking things at school, talking about the history of bicycles. And,
nice.
He does Penny Farthing races and a trick competition. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
So there's a podcast listener, Darren, who's written us a couple times, and he was in New Zealand the same time you guys were.
Okay. Yeah.
But apparently I was speaking with him on the phone the other day, and he never bumped into you, but he also has a photo that he sent to us of him riding a Penny Farthing. So I'm curious how many of those there are down in New Zealand.
I think there's a lot. There's a town somewhere where they do like Penny Farthing days or something like that. Okay. They have like Penny Farthing races and people dress up in old time costumes and that sort of thing. So
I think
they like their Penny Farthings.
Kind of like in Britain, there's the Brompton race, I believe, which is just people dressed like they're going to work, wearing suits and ties and all that. No vests, but ties.
Yeah.
And I guess you could wear a vest if you wanted to. But that's kind of the so maybe that's the New Zealand equivalent.
That's true.
There's also there's a postcard for New Zealand that says, well, at the airport, welcome to New Zealand. Please set your watches back 25 years.
Yeah, that's about right.
And everything. Fashion, music, so much as
internet.
So internet, was it hard to find?
Oh my God.
Access?
Yeah, we did actually see, you know, QuickNet.
Oh, you did? Okay.
They had maybe internet from the late 80s there. And it was really expensive. I mean, to get online, it was like costing us $10 a day.
Interesting.
And when if you're a business or a residence, when you bought your internet plan, you didn't buy bandwidth. You bought an allotment.
Hmm.
So you could only buy, you know, $70 would get you two gigabyte transfer for the entire month.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty spendy.
And they price it purely by data transfer instead of just 3 hours or whatever.
And it's the same way when you buy, you know, a lot of places where you go, you can log on to, you know, internet access company was one of the ones that we saw all over the place. And you know, you'd pay, $10 for the day or something, and it would be 24 hours or, you know,
Or 25K.
Or something like that, you know? And so, you know, whichever you max out first kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's tricky.
So they cap you.
Yeah. It was interesting just traveling to Europe when I was in Germany in February. I thought it would be easier to find internet access there than it was. And I guess either I wasn't looking in the right places or it just wasn't around. But
yeah.
Brandon, your thoughts?
Nope.
The internet's weird and hard to find.
It is.
Did they have internet there when you were there?
I had to find I got dropped off. I took the train. I was supposed to get picked up in Pukekaua by a farmer. And we just kind of lost our communications. But I took the train out of Auckland, get to this little tiny town. And I've got my giant backpack on, and it's my second day there, and I realize I don't have their phone number, and I don't know, and I didn't know exactly where in town to meet them, and so I just was wandering around with an iPod Touch, looking, and I found, you know, in an alleyway, this random, you know, one bar signal, and so it was kind of like, you know, looking for water with a stick.
Actually, no, what did work for us unexpectedly well is a Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
I had a Kindle 3G, and I brought it over there, and it just picked up their, you know, the cell signals that they use. Mm-hmm. So I was able to check email, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and everything, all for free.
There you go. So that's nice. It just built into the Kindle's system.
Yeah,
because it's a cellular thing as opposed to a Wi-Fi thing, right?
Right. If you get the 3G one, it's supposed to work in like 100 countries.
Hmm.
You know,
and that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Especially if you like talking to people and staying in touch and all that.
Yeah.
I was thinking that finding free wireless internet is sometimes kind of the equivalent of stealing a pie off the windowsill.
If they're paying for it by the gigabyte, yeah.
Well, you guys also talked to a lot of people while you were out on the road, both on your American ventures and on your New Zealand ventures.
Right.
And when you were in New Zealand, you were also sponsored by, I believe, the jersey that you're wearing is
Bicycle Times.
Yeah. And was that is that a Rafa shirt or is that an actual?
The maker of the jersey is Earth, Wind, Rider.
Earth, Wind, Rider.
So they do lots of really cool wool stuff.
I won't speak the R word again.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic jersey you're wearing that's labeled with the Bicycle Times logo. So.
Yeah, yeah. They sent it over to us right before we left. Yeah. I'm actually glad that they did because we thought we were going to be there for New Zealand summer, but it was really like cold and wet, so it came in super handy.
It was like Portland summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe now's a good time to mention that you guys are selling t-shirts, and one of them has the cloud with the rain, and it says 55 degrees.
Yes.
And then it says, welcome to Portland.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's out of the many designs that are available, that's a good one. You can find those at pathlesspedal.com, correct?
Yes.
Yes. So what was it like working with Bicycle Times? What was the partnership like? What did they ask you to do this, or did you say,
we pitched it to them. We said that, you know, we're going to go to New Zealand. We're going to, talk to people about the cycle trail and make this web series. You know, do you want to be a part of it? And they said, yeah. So since the jerseys, we worked out a distribution deal where it would show up on their site and we'd give them special content. It would show up on our site and everything. So if you go to Bicycle Times and type in Kiwi Chronicles, you'll see the videos there, but also with a specific post, like kind of behind the scenes stuff of what happened in that episode. So it was really good working with them.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe we mentioned when you made the entire Kiwi Chronicles available online. I, to my shame, have not yet seen them because I'm bad at keeping up with video. I read everything that comes down the blog and everything like that. But I'm just not a video guy yet. So, but I'm looking forward to checking
maybe
that out.
Maybe with the Branson kiosk.
If only there was a Branson kiosk somewhere that I could use. If only there was a way to get digital content delivered to you when you weren't at a kiosk. That's...
That will be the future, man.
Seriously. Do you want to tell us about some of the people that you met? Because you just there's a ton of folks, and I'm sure we could probably sit here all day and tell stories. But what are some of the ones that come to mind? What are the things that stick out when you think of conversations we had, people you met with interesting stories?
Oh, where to begin? I mean, you know, we talked to a lot of bike advocates in Auckland, in Wellington, Nelson, Christchurch. We had some great access to, you know, talking to folks that are part of the Ministry of Tourism that are actually doing the national, you know, scenic or the cycleways, and you know, we talked to members of parliament. Yeah. We talked to a lot of really amazing, you know, farmers and people along the path and, you know, hearing their stories, why they were, you know, talked into being, you know, cycle friendly and cycle advocates and this sort of thing.
I think one of the ones that really stuck out for me actually wasn't related to cycle trails at all, but was Damien Day. We met this guy who was following us on Facebook as we were there, and he's a Kiwi, and he's got all this kind of nerve damage.
I think we talked about this guy.
Yeah,
I remember when the story came out.
Yeah,
yeah. He couldn't feel anything, and he couldn't feel pain. You know, and and his physical therapy was riding a bicycle. And if he didn't ride a bicycle, if he was off the bike for too long, like the muscle memory would start to forget how to move. So he kind of just had to keep riding to be mobile.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really, really kind of inspiring story.
And riding a bicycle was what was saving his life.
Yeah.
It was just staying in motion and being active and moving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's what he does. He just sort of rides around New Zealand continually, you know.
Pretty cool.
It was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really touching.
Yeah.
Got to talk to Jonathan Kennett, who's a bit of a cycling legend in New Zealand, really into bike touring, and he has a publishing company, so it's all these guides about, you know, how to mountain bike in New Zealand, road rides in New Zealand, and he's been consulting with the New Zealand government on helping plan some of the cycle trails and the connecting routes and everything. So we got some really good access. We stayed with a member of parliament.
Yeah.
There you go.
Just pretty really great guy.
Yeah, Kevin Haig, Green Party, super into bike touring. He does trips with his partner like abroad as well. So he totally understood, you know, what bicycle tourists need and the kind of infrastructure and safe roads that are good for bicycle tourists.
And that's somebody in Parliament.
Yes.
Which,
yeah, I mean, that just blows me away.
The fact that there's someone in the official government structure, it knows what you need on a bicycle.
But like, they're the size of Oregon.
That's true.
And like, they've got a guy in Parliament with like full facial tattoos that's like a nonstop advocate for marijuana legalization. It's like, it's a cool country.
Yeah. All of New Zealand is what, 4.5 million people? Yeah. So it's much bigger than the city of Portland.
Did you watch? Okay,
yeah.
Did you watch New Zealand's Got Talent by perchance?
No.
It's like imagine if we had Portland's Got Talent. It's like that, or Oregon's Got Talent. Like suddenly, like you know, like you see it across the country, and it's like stupid as crap. But you watch you're like this guy's from fucking Malala. That's cool. That is so cool. Now I want to go to Malala and see him do that dog trick that he can do. And that's what it was like in New Zealand. It's like, shit, I took a bus through there. It's tiny. Yeah.
I saw the guy with the face tattoo.
And like half of it all is like doing weird things with sheep. It's really odd.
Is that so?
Yeah. I was like, look what I can make the sheep do. I'll sing and hold the sheep.
Stand on its hind legs prance about.
Great. You guys are wonderful.
Tell the future.
Were you guys struck by how many senior citizen bicycle tourists there were there? I found a lot going through the woofing and hosteling scene. Maybe I got the right time of year.
It seemed a lot more balanced, actually, in New Zealand. Than it seems like in a lot of the U.S., there tend to be more cycle tourists that are, you know, over the age of 50 than under the age of 50. But I guess because New Zealand is a far enough sort of destination, people, you know, our age and, you know, make a point of taking some time to get over there for their adventure, you know, whatever. And I don't know that we met too many Americans, but, you know, certainly a lot of Germans, you know, a lot of other Europeans, a lot of Asian travelers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Auckland was, that's what I found there, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that was you were actually, I believe you were not really advertising, Brandon, the fact that you were American when you were there. Is that correct?
Correct.
I also no one believed that you were.
My beard was largest at that point in my life.
It was like three times as long.
Yeah,
as it was now.
Yeah. And I was at a hostel, and this British guy was like, "You really thought I was a fine guy?" He's like, "I just thought you were fucking. I thought you were Canadian because you have this big beard, and I think everybody from Canada has giant beards. I couldn't imagine you being an American with that big of a beard." Didn't even have to lie and say I was Canadian. My beard went out ahead of me.
That's right.
Yeah, we Canadians.
We have the wrong Americans in global media, I would say. We need more beards.
Zach Galifianakis.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. oh, gosh.
I also met an old... now I want to tell a New Zealand story.
Please do.
No, so there was the first woofing farm I was at. There was an old man...
should we say woofing is willing workers
on organic farms?
On organic farms, yeah.
Workshare. Thing. There was a guy in his he must have been close to 80, and he had been bike touring around the country, but he spent most of his time scamming the people, not actually working on the farm. And his name was Denny, and he was designing, and he was of utmost conviction that he was perfecting a wing device where using simple human power, man will indeed be able to fly, and he had cracked it.
Did they make a YouTube video recently?
I have not. Did you find someone like... No, he didn't use Photoshop or any of that.
After
Effects. No After Effects. But, oh, Brock.
Does anybody else want to try the Moosehead?
Oh, hey, I have seen that in the store, and that's not something I would ever buy.
So that was my first encounter with the bicycle tourist. I'd never really gotten into the bike touring scene by 2008.
Yeah.
But then it was like, this guy's scamming people. He would go into the kitchen and just eat all their food.
Wow.
And take it back. So when they finally kicked him out, he said he was he's like, I am a person non grata. And he left. And they found just like piles of food he had taken from the kitchen and stuffed into his cabin.
Wow. Good grief.
Wow.
Yeah, that is not the kind of bicycle tourism we want to
promote. No, we are not all like that.
You're not 80-year-old mooches that live in defy gravity.
No, a mooch of any
without age. After Effects.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not really what you want to be known as.
Wow. Well, I think some of the most impressive bike tourists that we've met in the last year was actually on the trip that we did before we went to New Zealand. When we were riding across Central and Eastern Oregon,
Keep going.
Yeah, we met these two women who were probably in their mid-50s, childhood friends. They've been friends for forever. And they'd been talking on the phone one day, and, you know, the one woman had sort of been saying, you know, I'd really like to do something kind of fun and different, you know, sort of spice things up, you know, kind of have an adventure. And her friend had said, you know, well, you know, there's this thing that I've always wanted to do. And what she'd always wanted to do was go bike touring and ride across the country. And so they sort of decided, you know, in like, I don't know, March or something of last year, that they were going to go ride across the U.S., you know, sort of like That's in pieces. Awesome. So like 2 to 3 weeks each summer kind of deal. But they went out, they bought bikes, they learned how to ride their bikes, they bought all their camping gear, they took, you know, the safety classes, they figured out how to service the bikes and fix the flat tire, all this sort of thing within like 2 months. And then they just, you know, went off. And so we met them. What, I think they were maybe 5 days into their trip or something like that. We rode with them for a few days, and it was just so great because they were just, I mean, every little thing was exciting for them, and they just had the best sense of humor and were just laughing at everything. And they were sort of like, you know, if all we do is ride, you know, 12 miles, it's still going to be an adventure. And it was just such a...
That's awesome.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
So I really hope that they keep doing the pieces each summer.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know. Do, you know, finish Trans Am and then do, you know, Northern Tier and Southern Tier and, you know, keep going. So
that's pretty cool. And so they had started, this was starting from zero, basically. They knew nothing about bicycles or
pretty much, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then they just said, hey, we're going to do this. And 2 months later, they were fully outfitted, fully educated and fully ready to go. And,
exactly. Yeah. And their, you know, their kids were sort of like, were very skeptical. They were sort of like, I don't know, mom, you're going to kill yourself out there. You know, you're never going to get out of the Willamette Valley.
Right.
Thing. You know, they did it and they made it all the way to, you know, Eastern Oregon. So
definitely. Yeah. Awesome. That's not what I was thinking. I thought you guys were going to mention the, and I can't remember his name, the Eastern Oregonian Hobbit. Who I believe
that was also awesome.
Dan Price.
Dan Price, yeah.
Yeah. He was a cool guy.
And he literally lives in, is it a house in the ground? Like
it's a Hobbit home.
Earth berm.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It's a dugout. It's got a little tiny door that you have to, you know, crawl into.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's sort of built into a hillside kind of a thing. Yeah.
Right.
Crawl into it.
We should say he's not actually a hobbit, and he's actually
he's like 6 feet tall. Yeah,
he's the tallest hobbit I know. Actually.
right.
A lot of nth draft.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't be hasty. Yeah. But well, that's really his message: is like you got to slow down. You got to take advantage of what life has to offer. That's not that's not the bigger and better and faster and flashier, but really just getting to know where you live, the area you live in,
mm-hmm.
and inhabiting your space with a calm, with a zen like calm.
Well, it's just, you know, slow down, be more aware, you know, notice what you're surrounded by, and
right.
you know, appreciate it. And you know, and just, I mean, you know, he's an artist, so it was very much like everything is inspirational and everything can be creative, and you know, you can really just, you can make your life whatever you want to make it, you know, if you don't get into the, you know, the sort of treadmill of watching TV and
eating pizza. He had something against pizza.
Well, that's a shame. That's a real shame.
I was going to say TV and pizza have their place, but if they are the central focus of your life, there's probably something wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like the pizzas we make with the Totino's or whatever, and then like spicing them up with other ingredients.
Yeah, indeed.
You get yourself a cheese Totino's, then you add like organic mushrooms and
all
that. It's confession hour with Brock and Brandon. We've done this once.
It's
not grocery outlet because they were $2 pizzas.
It's not my first choice by any means, but I mean, you know, if
I don't always eat Totino's, but when I do, I put organic produce on it. It's the least interesting pizza connoisseur in the world.
Meme reference for the win, sir.
All of the points.
Well, welcome back to Portland. What does it look like from here? We talked a little bit, just hinted at the idea that advocacy will change its form for both mm-hmm. of you. But what does that look like practically? What are your plans from here?
Well, we're I think we read the post that we're kind of shifting hats from being active bicycle tourists to actively promoting bicycle tourism. So in Portland, you know, one of the reasons we're settling in Portland is Oregon's doing so much in terms of bicycle tourism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Oregon is they're starting to roll open the scenic bikeway programs. There's lots of activity from Travel Oregon, Cycle Oregon. So as a state, you know, there's a lot going on. And we really want to be involved in that, you know, helping promote the scenic bikeways, showing people, you know, why Oregon is such a great bike touring destination. I think a lot of people, when they think of bike touring in Oregon, they just think the coast. But there's, like, so much stuff, you know, like, you know, central eastern Oregon. So we want to make videos and write about that and hopefully work with the different tourism boards promoting their areas as a cycling destination.
Right. And one of the newest cycle, what do they call it? Scenic bikeways in Oregon is in eastern Oregon. Around, what is it, Unity and not Boardman, farther east than that. But it's like a figure eight shape around LaGrande and all those eastern Oregonian towns. So yeah, it's not just the coast. There's a lot of places to see by bike.
Go ahead. I was going to say, frankly, I think like the best cycling's out there.
Yeah,
I mean, the coast is kind of iconic. You know, you see the ocean. But after a while, it's like ocean on one side, traffic on the other. But, like, you know, and in central and eastern Oregon, you get like these great vistas, amazing sight lines, you know, hardly any traffic.
And I don't care what the math says, but I think there is more uphill than downhill on the coastal roads.
And, you know, one of the other things we want to do is we've really gotten to a point where it's just so exciting to us to see other people out there, you know, exploring on a bike, you know, and even though we've done these long, epic, you know, bike trips, there's something that's just so magical about going out for like a 2-day, 3-day trip, you know, go out for a weekend, a long weekend, whatever it might be. And so really, you know, sort of say to people, look, you can go on a bike trip and it doesn't have to be this, you know, this hardcore, you know, dumpster diving, sleeping under a bridge, kind of stereotypical kind of trip. You can go, you know, wine tasting and stay in a B&B. You can do all this stuff. So to really, you know, that's one of the things we want to do this summer is do a lot of short trips and really say, look, this is just as valid a method of bicycle travel as, you know, these long epic kinds of adventures and really, you know, sort of help to make bicycle travel more mainstream and more a part of, you know, everybody's life.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and more accessible. I mean, we love the stories of sleeping under bridges and carving out your own
but not place many in the people, wasteland. You love those stories, but you don't actually want to do it, you know?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Yeah. I think bike touring to the, at least, I don't know if I'm just in the bicycle touring bubble, but it seems as if there's like a really, there's lots of young energy interested in bicycle travel, traveling by bike. Yeah. It's not just, you know, baby boomers who did it in the 70s, but younger people are discovering it. Yeah. In some ways, I feel it's kind of like where fixed gear, the whole fixed gear thing was a couple, you know, like a decade or so ago, where it's just on the cusp of, you know, being really, really popular. So,
like the bicycle touring is the new fixie thing?
Yeah, I hate to phrase it in that way.
But it's like Bike Snob was saying that cyclocross is the new fixed gear.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's lots of different ways. Yeah. But, well, I don't know. It does seem like there's a groundswell. I mean, Brandon, you and I both probably a couple of years ago were not bicycle travelers or bicycle campers.
Yeah, but lifestyle. No, I didn't leave the city that much.
Right. But we've kind of gotten into it. And, you know, we've had some crazy adventures that have happened to us just because, like, we were decided to try something new. And it seems like it's something that the more we talk about it and the more that we do have these adventures, the more other people may be interested in also doing something like that.
Exactly. And telling more stories of families doing this. It's you don't have to have like the crazy story of like getting chased by dogs and things like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, the things that make for the best stories are not things that make families and children want to do it. So.
Yeah, and that's like I think like bicycle travel is a big tent, and for a long time,
so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It's a Hilleberg. Yeah. but you know, generally, like when you think by a bicycle tourist, you know, it's some young male out of college, you know, kind of dirt bagging it along, which is cool. You know,
that was me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But it can also be so much more than that. You know,
different. Need to be this like throwish like wild thing. Yeah.
I mean, we've met a lot of families that are out there with their kids, and that's amazing, you know. And we've met, you know, folks that are just, you know, they're doing it for fun. They're not interested in banging out a lot of miles. They're staying in motels or, you know, eating in restaurants or, you know, whatever it might be. And you know, that's pretty awesome to see too.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Because you do get the same great stories. You may not be, you know, chased by a dog, you know, from your free camping experience in the graveyard or something, but you do, you know, you go into like the local, you know, neighborhood pub and you meet the, like the crazy local who tells you all sorts of, you know, funky stories or whatever. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we just like really like to see bicycle travel as like another kind of vacation choice. Mm-hmm. You know, like you'd do a road trip or you'd go on a cruise, you know, you know, just travel by bike because it's fun, it's different, and mm-hmm. you know, opens yourself up to all sorts of interesting opportunities.
Yeah, and getting it to the place where it's as accessible as that, where it's as accessible as like, hey, let's book a cruise. Hey, let's go out on our bikes, that sort of thing. Like that, that'll be cool when that's actually the case.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Yeah, and that's actually, you know, one of the things we're bringing back from New Zealand is there's that Central Otago Rail Trail, and it is that easy.
Yeah.
Ooh, we should talk about that because that was something that I saw the pictures, heard the stories and whatnot. This is supposed to be like one of the premier off-road bicycling destinations kind of in the world, I suppose, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like people talk about bike economics and how, you know, bicycling can raise economies in small towns. And it's actually happening in the flesh as we speak in New Zealand and Central Otago. I mean, the trail is 150 kilometers long. So that's what?
It's like 90 some miles.
90 something miles. And it passes through a dozen communities. And in that 90 something miles, they bring in about $12 million annually.
16.
Or 16 million. 12 to $16 million annually.
Simply from people riding on this trail.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you have to picture this place. This is like the middle of nowhere. When we say town, we mean like two buildings.
Yeah. it's where all the merino sheep are.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, you go through these little villages that are, you know, communities of, you know, population 12, population 30, you know, I mean, just dying little hamlets and that are being brought back to life. And it's pretty incredible, mm-hmm. you know, and you get all these people from, you know, from Auckland, from Wellington, you know, from the big cities that come out there because it's a landscape that's very different from the rest of New Zealand. And it's an experience that you can't find anywhere else in New Zealand yet.
If you're trying to think of what part of Middle Earth this would be Rohan, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, just to give people context. Okay.
Everyone's horse country. Like, oh, Rohan, yeah.
The writers. The writers of Rohan?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can picture, I mean, it's a rails to trails conversion. So it was an old railway that, you know, that closed down, and then they took the rail bed and they took up the rails and they, you know, put down, you know, nice gravel instead of the ballast, and they, you know, sort of opened it up and went with it, and it's just grown very organically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you can go there, and one of the things we really like about it is you can ride the trail in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're like a really fit rider, you could realistically ride all in one day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people do it in like 2 days or 4 days. Some people camp. Some people, you know, mm-hmm. stay in like the fancy accommodations. So however you like to travel, there's, you know, some kind of avenue for you to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of camping accommodations are there? And can you just camp anywhere or are there designated campgrounds?
There's designated campgrounds. New Zealand, has always been a free camping mecca.
Really?
Until recently.
Oh.
And they've really started to clamp down because they've had a lot of tourists, you know, sort of abusing the privilege.
Yeah.
So you probably could free camp along there. But, you know, there's some really nice spots to camp, you know, that are legal and official. So, you know, why not some of those?
And free.
But yeah, there's a couple that are free. There's a couple... sort of on the western end that are, you know, they're what they call holiday parks, you know, which is similar to what we might, you know, call an RV park here. And
right.
It's, you know, so you get your patch of grass to pitch your tent. It's got a shower. It's got a kitchen you can use, that sort of thing. But,
yeah.
You know, they're reasonable. I think, you mm-hmm. know, $10 or something.
$10.
Yeah, per person or so. And
that's not bad.
It's not. Nope. We camped, I think the best place that we camped was a small town. It was this woman that had converted her property to, you know, like a backpackers, which is what they call a hostel. And then she had some private cabins that you could rent, or you could just pitch your tent in the, you know, field.
Yeah.
And it was just gorgeous. You were out there, you know, there was like a, you know, herd of cattle on the other side of the fence, you know, kind of thing. And it was just beautiful and quiet and, yeah, really nice.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So in that, you know, 150K stretch, it really is like that easy. It's, you know, it's a bike travel option that, you know, families do.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, young people do, the older people do.
Mm-hmm. You can go out with your own bike. You can hire a bike. There's all these like companies that'll hire bikes out. And so you can, you know, you can hire a bike, and if you want to just ride 10K and then, you know, have them sag you to the next town, you know, they'll totally do
they'll
that.
Do
or
that,
you,
yeah.
There's you know? No, there's no shame in that. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Well, and really there's not. I mean, like, I think it would be lovely if we could all get to the place where we're all self-supported and we're all like right. riding, you know, the distances that we want to travel and that sort of thing. But realistically speaking, like, you know, if you're getting your feet wet and you're not sure how you're going to do, it is nice to have the mm-hmm. option to for someone to pick mm-hmm. you up.
Right.
Well, and sometimes it's nice to not have to bring all that stuff with you too. Sometimes you want to just say, you know what, I want to travel light this time, and I want to stay in a bed,
right.
and just, you know, call it good. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. The trip that I took recently in Eastern Oregon, I feel like I'm going to get soft because the whole staying in a hotel. We stayed indoors under a roof every night for like 8 days.
Yeah.
And almost all of those were hotels, you know, some of which we got like free hot chocolate and cookies at.
Nice.
And it's like, how will I ever get back to camping? But I think camping is probably easier in the summer too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what comes as far as living in Portland, what sorts of things are you guys going to be involved with? Because there are,
let's just get to the zombie ride.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this.
I'm planning the zombie apocalypse ride, which we're gonna roll into with Mike Cobb. He's got the cargo bike disaster trials race, so we decided to join forces because we're of the same mind of had escaped disasters. In his case, you know, the big Cascadia earthquake. In mind the zombie apocalypse. So.
Oh, which of course, yeah, could it?
They aren't mutually exclusive.
They could be the
true.
Same thing. Yep.
The Earth could open up and the zombies start crawling out.
Yes. And this really
from the seduction
could.
Zone. Yeah.
This really could happen at any time. I think
so
is the thing.
Be blind by the time they get to it. Yeah.
We need to keep that in mind. It's just that the zombies are there, like no matter where, you know.
It's yeah. just waiting by the mantle.
Well, that's where I saw one last.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Just taking
out. So fusion ride.
Yeah.
Fusion is yeah. putting it strong.
Yeah. So it's going to start at
fusion. Is yeah. it more funk or jazz?
Yeah.
So the ride's going to start at Bella Colt and
fantastic place.
Yes. And we're going to end it at Bella Colt as well, but we're going to give prizes for the best survivor bike and best zombie bike. So you can either choose if you're going to be part of the undead or the small band of the living and outfit your bikes and yourself accordingly.
There we go.
It's like chainsaws coming out the sides.
Mm-hmm. Just
remember, of course, that it's a group ride, and you know, if you have a chainsaw coming out the side, you don't want to accidentally, yeah. cut up your fellow rider. But.
I was
so
thinking,
don't cut me off in traffic. Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to be a buzzkill. Cut me off, seriously.
Hey, literally? So, I was just thinking if there's ever a place for the Ben Hare chariot with the razor blades on those,
yeah.
Yeah. This might be it.
Nice.
Yeah.
But only if it's a zombie on a bike.
Yeah.
Either of you know what you're going to go as? Or is that a surprise?
You can't both be zombies.
Yeah, that's true.
Brandon, you had a fantastic zombie costume this last Halloween.
Thank you.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. We should post that picture again.
I found some good YouTube videos about how to make open wounds and things like that. You saw that one of like a zipper on
yeah,
your face?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Basically did that same basic
wow.
thing. There's some really cool zombie makeup videos on YouTube.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So if you need some help, we should find the best ones and link to them with this
it's
with
really
this episode.
It's really weird to watch people like basically appearing to open their face up.
Yeah, definitely. So this is the whole zombie fascination. I mean, it's kind of a wave that's hitting culture again.
Yeah.
But you guys did the Walking Dead poster that you modified.
Yeah. So the AMC show, The Walking Dead,
which you and I, Brandon, are good fans of, big fans of. We love it.
I think the first season they had this great image of Rick, one of the main characters, going into the city on horse, and then on the left-hand traffic lane, you just see cars backed up and crashed and everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, they probably didn't mean to make a comment on, like, you know, cars and everything, but I was like, oh, you know. You know, when you know, the shit hits the fan,
exactly.
You know, it's going to look a lot like that. You know,
right.
There's going to be traffic jams. People are going to be hoarding fuel. And, you know, it might be a good option to use a bicycle as a means of escape or at least definitely in, like, in the post-apocalypse, you know, when gas is going to be even more precious, to use that for your short trips.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not that you should wait until it gets that far to do that. But, you know, it's just amazing when you watch these zombie movies or read kind of post-apocalyptic fiction. It's like no one really thinks to use the bicycle. You know?
Well, yeah, no one thinks that fuel is going to be as hard to find as it probably will be.
Well, when you consider that it'll evaporate within a year, basically, and all that.
Yeah, all of these zombie stories have, like, untold amounts of fuel just waiting in canisters for people, which it seems to me to be unlikely.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how much of a driving force, like a narrative force it is, you know. Like in almost every zombie movie you watch, it's like, oh, we have to get gas.
Right.
Or we have to drive someplace.
The car won't start. You can't find the keys in time. You know, whatever it might be.
Or have you ever read, Cormac McCarthy's The Road?
Yes.
Yeah. So
Brandon, you and I are both also big fans of that. Basically anything apocalyptic, anything that just says we're screwed.
I love it. But then, you know, I thought a good alternative title would have been, you know, I should have found the bike. I could have gone to the coast faster. Instead of pushing a shopping cart, you know.
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just ride it downhill.
Yeah.
The imagery of the shopping cart had a lot going for it. And Robert Duvall as the old dude in the movie version was, that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
But yeah, just certainly, like, how much better and how much better equipped could we be,
right?
If indeed we had some sort of flatbed that we could ride with all of our stuff on.
And right. I would like to put a machine gun on the front of my bicycle, so it's like those speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi, in case there's zombie Ewoks.
That's right.
I think zombies are kind of like where science fiction was, you know, a long time ago. It's like a way to talk about something kind of disturbing and unsettling, but in kind of a funny way.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a good way to talk about peak oil.
You can role play these without actually talking about peak oil.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You don't seem that much of a...
You don't have to be a crazy hippie, right? You know, to talk about, you know...
Preparedness.
Right.
You know.
Right. I mean, the government does that already.
Right.
So, wait, Brandon, set up that land speeder joke again, or the
what?
set up that joke about the gun on your bike.
I already said it.
Well, you do it again. I just thought of something.
In the zombie apocalypse, I want to put a machine gun on the front of my bike, so it can be like the speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi.
Fred Leader, I don't copy. Okay, that wasn't worth it, was it? Okay.
Man.
All right.
So which beer are we on?
You guys just cracked open the which one is it? The
we cracked
one we've
open
never tried before.
Red Thistle Ale Red by Thistle. Golden Valley Brewery.
Nice.
Brewed in McMinnville. Mm-hmm. McMinnville.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, congratulations. That sounds like a good experience. We are dangerously approaching the 1 hour mark on the recording, so we should probably wrap this up.
You just made a Fred Leader joke.
Come on, admit it. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they wore, you know. Well, Wedge Antilles was always wearing the bright orange.
That's
it's
right.
Consistent.
Steven Montana doesn't think so, but I'm sure he'll have a sense of humor about it. So you guys are going to be here for Pedalpalooza this year, you have not before. Is that correct?
We were here last year for
little bits and pieces.
Okay.
Yeah, because, of course, you know, I was hobbling around with a brace on the ankle. So.
Right, and hobbling is not the best way to enjoy the Pedalpalooza experience. So this will be a much better one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hobblepalooza.
That's right.
Yes, this year we will get our fill of bicycle rides.
Right, right. Let's run down the list real quick. You guys have an Amazon store with some products you recommend. Mm-hmm. That's one good way to support the Path Less Pedaled. Path Less Pedaled itself has peanut butter and panniers.
It's our ebook.
Yes,
and then we've got I've been designing a bunch of shirts through through a website called Spreadshirt. They actually have really good print quality. So this is one shirt. So we're making shirts about bike advocacy and zombies and bikes and just nerdy bikey stuff.
Yeah.
If I ordered one today, how quickly could it get here?
What day is today?
Friday.
You'd probably get it next week.
Okay, nice. Takes about a week, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The fulfillment's pretty quick. It's print on demand. So
right. Yeah. Fulfillment in many ways.
Yes.
And then are you still making head badges, Laura?
I am, yes. And actually, I found a great workspace here in Portland.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. Well, community kind of space where you can spread out and beat on some metal.
Perfect.
So,
as everyone loves to do.
So yes, head badges.
Fantastic. Is there anything else we can do to support you guys and what you're doing? Because we believe in what you do.
I think that's about it. I mean, we're still working on the Brompton touring book and some other publishing things, but hopefully we're going to be launching a new video series soon about short bicycle trips.
Okay.
In Oregon.
Yeah.
So look for that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the? Oh man, I just had it in my head and it's gone. Well, there's something. No, you guys were in a Brompton ad.
Yeah. They used one of our images from New Zealand.
Wellington,
from Wellington.
Right. Yeah. So now you're more famous than you were.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. We will we'll keep on drinking these beers, I'm sure, and there are much fun will be had after we turn off the recording. But thank you for coming in. Thank you for once again being part of the Sprocket Podcast. And now it's a tradition. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Awesome. Cool.
Thank you.
The end. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program. Send us your suggestions for anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you'd like us to drink, or anyone you'd like us to have on the show. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. We can put it on the program for you. Or you can text message us at that same number, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He's on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Keep listening, and we'll see you next time on the Sprocket Podcast.